Ashada dha naf purusha dharmas yasya parantapa aprapya mang nivartante mrityu sangsara vartmani. Translation. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Purport. The faithless cannot accomplish this process of devotional service. That is the purport of this verse. Faith is created by association with devotees. Unfortunate people, even after hearing all the evidence of Vedic literature from great personalities, still have no faith in God. They are hesitant and cannot stay fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, faith is a most important factor for progress in Krishna consciousness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. That is called real faith, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yatha turor mula nishechenena tripyanti tatskandha bhujo pashakaha prano paharaj cha yatendriyanam tataiva sarvahanam achyuteja. By giving water to the root of a tree, one satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves, and by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, one automatically satisfies all the demigods and all other living entities. End quote from Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, after reading Bhagavad Gita, one should promptly come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all other engagements and adopt the service of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. If one is convinced of this philosophy of life, that is faith. Now, the development of that faith is the process of Krishna consciousness. There are three divisions of Krishna conscious men. In the third class are those who have no faith. Even if they are officially engaged in devotional service, they cannot achieve the highest perfectional stage. Most probably they will slip after some time. They may become engaged, but because they haven't complete conviction and faith, it is very difficult for them to continue in Krishna consciousness. We have practical experience in discharging our missionary activity that some people come and apply themselves to Krishna consciousness with some hidden motive. And as soon as they are economically a little well situated, they give up this process and take to their old ways again. It is only by faith that one can advance in Krishna consciousness. As far as the development of faith is concerned, one who is well versed in the literatures of devotional service and has attained the stage of firm faith is called a first class person in Krishna consciousness. And in the second class are those who are not very advanced in understanding the devotional scriptures, but who automatically have firm faith that Krishna bhakti, or service to Krishna, is the best course, and so in good faith have taken it up. Thus they are superior to the third class, who have neither perfect knowledge of the scriptures nor good faith, but by association and simplicity are trying to follow. The third class person in Krishna consciousness may fall down, but when one is in the second class, he does not fall down, and for the first class person in Krishna consciousness, there is no chance of falling down. One in the first class will surely make progress and achieve the result at the end. As far as the third class person in Krishna consciousness is concerned, although he has faith in the conviction that devotional service is very good, he has not yet gained adequate knowledge of Krishna through the scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes these third class persons in Krishna consciousness have some tendency toward karma yoga and jnana yoga, and sometimes they are disturbed, but as soon as the infection of karma yoga or jnana yoga is vanquished, they become second class or first class persons in Krishna consciousness. Faith in Krishna is also divided into three stages and described in Srimad Bhagavatam. First class attachment, second class attachment, and third class attachment are also explained in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. Those who have no faith even after hearing about Krishna and the excellence of devotional service, who think that it is simply eulogy, find the path very difficult, even if they are supposedly engaged in devotional service. For them, there is very little hope of gaining perfection. Thus, faith is very important in the discharge of devotional service. Bhagavad Gita is a short, only 700 verses, a short discussion of spiritual knowledge. Discussion means it's between Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Arjuna, and Krishna instructs Arjuna in spiritual knowledge. This Bhagavad Gita is described as a discussion of spiritual knowledge, Brahma Vidya. Hare Krishna. It differs from what we normally in the Western world consider to be scripture, inasmuch as Krishna does not tell Arjuna, just believe me or burn in hell forever, but he instructs him in spiritual knowledge. For instance, Krishna says, Janma Mrityu Jaravyadhi Dukkha Dosha Anudarshanam. One symptom of knowledge is to see that this world is full of misery, primarily birth, death, old age, and disease. So this is not a religious statement which one has to accept with faith. It's something that we can see all around us. However, to attain spiritual knowledge, faith is required, because that which is spiritual is by definition different to that which is material. That which is material is that which we can understand through our material senses and mind, that which we can touch, taste, smell, feel, hear. These are things we gain knowledge in this world through the senses. And having gained that knowledge, then we can use our minds to process that. And that is what science and all other material disciplines develop on. But spiritual knowledge begins with the understanding that all of reality is not encompassed by all that we can touch, taste, smell, feel, hear, and think about. That is the basis of materialistic science, to think that, well, if we can't directly perceive it or directly think about it, then it can't exist, which is a very foolish proposition. So spiritual knowledge begins with the faith, which is, it's not some blind faith like believing in leprechaun. Whoops, we're in Germany. What do you have in Germany? I just came from Ireland. They have leprechauns in Ireland. Fairies? They killed them all off a long time ago. Richard Dawkins, you may have heard the name. He says that belief in God is like believing in fairies. He likes to give that as an example of something stupid, but, well, why not believe in fairies also? But it is actually a very intelligent proposition to consider that reality is not all that we can touch, taste, smell, feel, hear, and think about. Us tiny little beings on a tiny little planet in a little blip in time, and we're supposed to know everything by looking through telescopes and microscopes. So faith that there is reality, faith that reality beyond the immediate everything that we can perceive. There's more to existence than atoms. That I am not simply, and I and every living being, we're not just simply a combination of chemicals. In fact, even in the most atheistic countries in the world, metaphysical principles are at work, that there is good and bad. If we're all chemicals, then what's good and what's bad? If there was just a big bang which came out of nothing and then it all settled down and here we all are, then there's no good and there's no bad. And if we're all just chemicals, then if someone was to smash up someone else's car, they would be arrested, if they're caught by the police, for committing a crime. If there was to smash up someone's body and kill it, they would be arrested and it would be considered a much worse crime. Why is that? If a car is chemicals and a human is just chemicals, why the distinction? So faith in the spiritual, it is not just something which is for foolish people who are dreaming of something, but it's actually very reasonable. And even in the law of any country, it's presumed that at least human life is something more important than motor cars. That there's something intrinsically more important. Unfortunately, most of the countries of the world are still in the ignorant consciousness of thinking that other life doesn't matter. For instance, Switzerland is famous for cows, which means there's a lot of cow slaughter going on in this country. They never consider that, well, maybe the cows suffer also. They also don't want to be killed. So here Krishna speaks about faith, that one cannot advance in Krishna consciousness without faith. There has to be some faith to attain this knowledge. And that's true, actually, of any knowledge. For instance, if you want to learn about science, or even if you don't want to learn, you're forced to go to school. In all these free countries, the children are imprisoned in these nasty little things they call schools, so they can become good citizens and believe all the things that they're taught at schools. So an atmosphere is created of faith, that the teacher knows something that you have to learn, and it's called knowledge. And if you don't have faith in it, or if you don't have interest in it, then you won't have any interest, you won't learn. I didn't learn many things at school. I didn't have much interest in it. But if you don't have faith, then why should you be interested to study it at all? There are adult education courses also. You can go and you can join some evening class in what subjects? Things like making tapestry and learning computer program, all kinds of things you can do. But if you don't have faith that in the subject, then how will you learn? How will you have any interest to learn? If the teacher comes and says, now we're going to learn about chemistry. The first thing we're going to learn about is atoms, and they combine into molecules. And what do you mean atoms? I don't believe in atoms. Well, what do you mean don't believe in atoms? Show me an atom. Prove that atoms exist. Show me. Come on, show me some atoms. What are you going to do? Now they discovered the God particle. Okay, show me. Show it. Can they show it? They can't see it. They can only presume it exists. There's no... If we take proof to mean that which we can see, touch, taste, smell, feel, or hear, and nothing else, then there's no neutrinos. There's no God particles, or whatever they call them. Came through Switzerland, right? That's another claim to glory for Switzerland, apart from killing cows and keeping all the crooks of the world's money locked up. Oh, and being neutral also. So one has to have faith to even begin to study the subject. Otherwise, if from the beginning, you know, I don't believe in atoms, I don't even molecules, come on, what's a molecule? And then you can't even begin to understand if you don't have faith that there is a body of knowledge that you can also learn about. So one has to have faith. Here we're talking about, Krishna is talking about faith in himself. And in Bhagavad Gita, which is the summation of all Vedic knowledge, Krishna is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is obviously an English term, which is a transposition of the Sanskrit, which comes here in Bhagavad Gita also, Paramam Purusham Divyam, which means the Supreme Spiritual Person, Supreme Personality of Godhead. The English word is God. A lot of people feel uncomfortable with the word God. It has a lot of connotations that go with it. People like Mr. Herr Calvin, who is also here in Switzerland, made the history that goes with it makes it rather uncomfortable for many people. It's if you don't believe in it, then you get burned in hell forever. And just to give you a little sample, we'll burn you right now. So the term God, it's become a rather unfortunate term, but that there is a controller, there is an ultimate controller, that is also not provable. People say, well, prove there's God, but it's a very reasonable thing to believe. It's takes quite a stretch of the imagination or blind faith in the people who call themselves scientists, some of the people who call themselves scientists, to accept that this whole world in which there is clearly so much order, if there wasn't so much order at the microcosmic level and the macroscopic level and everything in between, then there wouldn't be any science to study anyway. So it is a very imaginative proposal that there's no intelligence behind all this order. So Krishna means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Person who has put everything in order and maintains everything in order. A lot of people have difficulty with the idea of God because they think that, well, if God is all powerful and he's all good, then why is this world such a mess? Why is there so much suffering here? About 30 years ago, there was a famous rabbi in America, means he's famous in America. He came up with a book called Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. The idea is that if you're good and God is good, then you should have a good life. But we often see that people who are bad, they seem to have a better life than the people who are good. So it might seem to be a good policy to be bad. And in fact, there are people, a group of religionists in America, it's not a new group, but it's was previously not allowed, but now with the American liberal laws that you're supposed to allow any religion, they can go on. They're called Satanists, and they worship Satan. With the idea that in Christianity and in Islam also, I'm not sure about Judaism, probably in there, there's a figure called Satan who is the rival of God. And in Christian religion, God and Satan, they're always fighting it out, and God's Superman, and he always comes out on top. But according to the Satanists, they say, hey, look around, God's not in control here, Satan's in control. Better worship Satan. Seems to make sense. If we follow the idea that this world is created by God for us to enjoy. But Krishna here states in Bhagavad Gita gives a completely different understanding that this world is not meant to be a place of enjoyment. It is by nature janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudashanam. One should see that this world is full of birth, death, old age and disease. It is a place of suffering. It is designed by God to be a place of suffering. Wait a minute, who's God and who's Satan? They got mixed up or something? No, we are in this world. Why? Why are we suffering in this world? We want to be happy. Why is there suffering? So that's also described here in Bhagavad Gita. Remember, it's a book of spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge means you may not be able to go out and do some experiments, mix some acid and some alkali. Oh, that reminds me. Pharmaceutical. That's another thing. Switzerland's famous for. Not such a bad little country after all. So, why is it a place of suffering? Well, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Book of Knowledge, Purusha Sukha Dukha Nam Bhuktritve Hetu Ruchate, that the happiness and distress that we experience in the world, because we do experience some happiness also, kind of happiness like if you're caught in the rain and you're getting wet and you come back and you get out of the rain, then you feel happy. So there are some kinds of happiness. So coming in out of the cold in a winter's day to a warm room, very nice. So there is some kind of happiness in this world. So Krishna describes that we ourselves create our own happiness and our distress. As the English saying goes, it's probably an equivalent in German, man is the architect of his own destiny. In other words, there is a law of karma. For every action that we perform, there is a reaction. It may not be equal or opposite, but there is a reaction. That activities have consequences. We might be able to be a corrupt ruler and exploit our citizens and stick all our money in a bank in Switzerland and get away with it. But there are laws of karma by which we will have to suffer in future lives. And in fact, the whole nation, which is party to such crimes, they also, all the citizens have to share in that. So karma is not only individual, there's also joint karma, which is why some people are born in a rich country and some people are born in a poor country. Some people are born, not many, with very beautiful, good-looking bodies, and the rest of us simply wished we were, but we don't. So it's all due to previous activities. Which doesn't mean that everything is predestined, getting back to Mr. Calvin. Many things are predestined. For instance, the kind of body we have. Of course, you can alter the body by doing exercises. You can maybe work off some fat or build up some muscles, or you can have plastic surgery and change your ugly face into a less ugly face. So there are things that you can do, but within limits. However much you have plastic surgery and put on makeup, if someone has a particularly ugly face, they're never going to become a candidate for winning a beauty competition. So to a large extent, the position that we're in is predestined. But what we do with that situation, that makes our future. Just like if you get on an airplane going from Zurich to London, and you're in the flight, and halfway through you think, well, actually, I don't want to go to London. I'd rather go to, where else are you going to go to? Go to New York. So what do you do? Hijack the plane? No. They probably wouldn't have enough fuel to go to New York anyway if they're only going to London. You're more or less caught in the... Nowadays, for saying that, you could even probably get arrested, even for making a suggestion of hijacking. You have to be careful what you say. So if you're on a flight from Zurich, how do you pronounce it? Zurich. I won't even try. It's the German z is different to the English one. So if you're on a flight from, where are we going? Zurich to London. So you're stuck in the flight, more or less. I mean, there are things you could do to try to get off it, but it's pretty difficult. It's actually more difficult to, once you're on a flight from Zurich to London, to get off it than it is to commit suicide. You could get off your present course of action by committing suicide, but that's not a very good idea because it doesn't end everything. It just sends you to another body with the bad karma of for having killed a body. So if you're on that flight, then you have to go. You're in that situation. But what you do on the flight, you can go to sleep or watch the movies if they have them on a short flight like that, or read a newspaper if you happen to have one with you. You can eat something, drink something, talk to the person next to you. You have various options of what you do. And there's not much you can do to create good karma on a flight. You could maybe, I don't know, difficult to say, praise the company and they might give you a free flight. Not very likely. You could do something so that you get arrested on arrival. But anyway, you get the idea that there's some freedom to act, but you're stuck in the flight. So in the same way, we get a particular kind of body according to our previous activities, but then we have some choice as to what to do with it. Some choice, limited choice. Limitations are there. For instance, we can't make a very ugly body into a very beautiful body. Other limitations are there according to the culture that we're born into. For instance, according to some religious systems, if you don't believe what they say, you burn in hell forever. But then we have to consider people who are born into a different culture and they're not likely to believe in that, which would suggest that God likes those who are born into one particular culture. Just like, for instance, if you're born in Thailand, most of the people of Thailand are staunchly what they call Buddhist, although their life seems to have very little resemblance to anything the Buddha did or said, but they are followers of the local version of Buddhism. And according to the culture that they're born into, they're very unlikely to convert to Christianity. So why did God create them all if they all have to burn in hell forever? Doesn't seem to make much sense. However, we understand that people attain different situations according to their previous activities and according to their previous mentality. So can we prove that? No. If you want proof in terms of that which is measurable by human experience, it's not possible. But we have to accept that on faith. It's a very reasonable faith. It is supported by the Vedas. Veda means knowledge. This knowledge is understood to be eternal because we're talking about eternal principles. So this knowledge exists eternally. Before the creation, this knowledge was there. There's in Vedic knowledge teaches us that there's creation of the world exists for some time, after some time it's wound up again, it's destroyed, and then again there's creation. It's not just a one-time thing. Not just a big bang that happened for no particular reason, and not that God was sitting up in heaven, and one time he decided to create the world and a bunch of people, and most of them he sends to burn in hell forever, and a few he brings to him, and then it's all over and finished. And Jesus comes to save us on this planet, and why the rest of the planets and millions of stars were created, no explanation whatsoever. However, the Vedic knowledge teaches us that there are millions of planets and there are life forms on all of them. We may not be able to see them through our telescopes because on other planets there are living beings with subtle forms who we cannot see. But there is life on every planet, and we attain bodies in different planets according to our activities and different places within this planet also. We attain according to our activities. Just like here, you see, on this planet. The birth in Switzerland is a very different package to birth in Thailand in terms of the way of life, the way of thinking. The basic activities are there of eating and sleeping and getting some food, having sex and having friends and enemies and dying eventually. But the whole outlook on life is very different. The whole culture is very different. The economy is very different. So we are born in different situations, not only on this planet, but throughout the universe, according to our previous activities and according to our previous disposition. In other words, what we're aiming for. Just to give an example, someone wants to be very big and powerful, a big leader. There are many people like that, many politicians. Many people take to politics to become a big leader. But not everyone who wants to be a big leader can be a big leader, because the number of candidates for the leading posts are less than the number of aspirants for the leading posts. So it may be that someone who has the aspiration to be a big leader, but they don't have the karmic credit to attain such a post, then in their next life they can become a big leader, maybe of a pack of dogs. So they get their wish fulfilled, but not exactly in the way they've imagined. But they do get to become a leader. So this information, this is spiritual knowledge, which is comprehensive spiritual knowledge of everything in the universe and beyond it, of who we are and how our highest aspiration, beyond that of being a leader of some imagined country. I mean, countries are imagined after all. Although there are borders which demarcate Switzerland from Germany, Italy, and Slovenia, France, and what other countries, Austria, that it borders, Germany. They're man-made. So it's more or less imaginary. We call this Switzerland, and on the other side it's Germany. So we may think, yes, to become a leader, that's a great post, but it's a childish desire. Rather, we should be intelligent enough to think, what is our highest aspiration? What is the ultimate aspiration? Who actually am I? I want to be happy always. Anyone disagree with that? Anyone who disagrees, we'll take you outside and bang you on the head with a hammer. One way of preaching. Everyone wants to be happy. Even if you say, I don't want to be happy, that means you want to be happy by not being happy. You can't avoid it. There are some people like that. They're called masochists. They like to torture themselves in this way. Even this feeling depressed, it's another kind of egoistic indulgence. I might get challenged on that, but it's just thinking about me. Oh, I'm not happy.
The whole world's against me. No one likes me. Me, 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 me.
Always thinking me, me. It's another, it's an intense form of egoism. So, what is my best position? Well, first of all, we have to understand who we are. If I think I'll be happy by being a big leader of a country, if I think I'll be happy by having lots of money, that is due to a misunderstanding of who we are. And factually, we see that people who get lots of money, they don't become happy. And why anyone would want to be a leader of a country and have so many headaches on their head and become the leader of the country means that people cheer you in and after a short time, they boo you out. Switzerland's also unique in not really having a leader. Is it? Something like that. So, who are we, first of all? The Vedas inform us that we are eternal spiritual beings, and our eternal aspiration is to be situated on the planet of eternality, no death, full happiness, full understanding. Now, that requires some faith, but again, it's reasonable faith. It's reasonable to consider that I am not simply a bag of chemicals. I have so many hopes and desires and emotions and feelings for people, and is it just some chemical reactions? Is this whole universe just going on because there was a big bang and then everything banged and it's been banging ever since with no meaning whatsoever? It's quite reasonable to accept that there is some order and some reason behind it. But then why is there misery in the world? Well, because we're not connected with the original source of all eternity, knowledge and bliss, that is Krishna. That is the meaning of yoga. Bhagavad Gita is yoga shastra. It is discourse on yoga. Now that doesn't mean when we say the word yoga, people think of doing various exercises, which is the exercise that nowadays are called yoga is one part, not at all the most important part, of one system of yoga. Yoga means to link with the Supreme, and there are various processes for doing that. And the asanas, or the exercises, which are nowadays called yoga, are part of a system to help to prepare the body for meditation. And so it's preparing for meditation. Meditation, that in itself is not yoga. It's also to lead to the point of yoga. So the word yoga is one of those many misunderstood words. There are many of them. But yoga actually means to link, and it particularly means to link with the Supreme, and Bhagavad Gita teaches us how to link with the Supreme. First of all, it requires knowledge to do that, and that knowledge is based on the faith that this is reality. So it does require some faith, but it's not unreasonable. To link with the Supreme. First of all, if we are to link with the Supreme, we have to understand who we are. We are eternal, spiritual by nature beings. And the Supreme is the eternal, spiritual by nature, living being. Purusham Paramam Divyam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That He is infinite and we are infinitesimal. This has to be recognized. Otherwise, one cannot advance in spiritual knowledge. This has to be recognized at the beginning. If we think, as is a very common mistake, that I am spiritual, therefore I am supreme. then our spiritual life goes that far, understanding I am spiritual. It doesn't go any further. Just the theoretical knowledge that I am spiritual. Because I am not supreme, well, you can all see that. You can all understand I'm not supreme. But we should understand that you are also not supreme. None of us in this world are supreme. We're all dependent. We're all controlled. We don't know who we are, why we are here, why we got this body, where we're going. We don't know. That means we're not supreme. And we are dependent. That means we have some independence, but very limited independence. We didn't choose where we were born, what kind of body we got. We don't choose when we're going to die, how we're going to die, where we'll go after death. We're very limited in our choices. So there is supreme control. And there is a supreme controller. Yoga means to link with that supreme controller. How do we link with that supreme controller? How does a subordinate link with a superior? By service. Now, in the modern era of democracy and egalitarianism, these notions are not very popular. But actually it's a fact that the weak must subordinate to the strong. The small must subordinate to the big. Now, that notion is not very popular, probably because in this world, those who do become more powerful than others tend to exploit and mistreat them. But that is not the case with Krishna. Service to Krishna means service to that person who is the most kind, the most sweet, the most beautiful, the most everything nice you can think of. And if we don't want to serve Krishna, if we want to be inimical to Krishna, well, he can also be the supreme nasty. It's not recommended. If we neglect Krishna, if we want to live without Krishna, then we have to live in this world of birth and death. So, devotional service is the process of bhakti yoga. In devotional service, there are activities in bhakti yoga, performing yoga asanas. This is not part of bhakti yoga. The first activity in bhakti yoga is shravana, hearing. We should hear about Krishna. First of all, hear, who are we? Who is Krishna? What is my relationship with Krishna? How to revive that relationship? The beginning treatise on this is Bhagavad Gita. So shravanam and kirtanam. Kirtanam means to glorify Krishna. You may think, well, that's very egoistic of Krishna, that he likes to be glorified. Well, you can take it that way if you like. Krishna also has an ego. We also have an ego. But he is the one person who is suitable to be glorified. By glorifying Krishna, we become free of all bad tendencies within ourselves. We become purified. To glorify Krishna purifies us from mundane lust, greed, anger, and so many other bad qualities. So, kirtan means to glorify Krishna by speaking his instructions, by glorifying his activities, his spiritual activities in the spiritual world, by chanting his name. That is the general understanding of kirtan, is nama kirtan. So shravana and kirtan, these are the two most important activities in bhakti yoga. Shravana kirtanam, Vishnu smaranam, which leads to a constant remembrance of Krishna. And if we constantly remember Krishna, that is the perfection of bhakti yoga. And by remembering Krishna, then we get transferred at the time of death to the spiritual world. So this is This requires a lot of faith for people who are raised in a materialistic culture. This term materialistic, it's generally used to denote people who are very interested in getting lots of money and fancy cars and fancy houses and being considered part of the high society. But another meaning, the philosophical meaning of the term materialist or materialism, means the faith that there is nothing but matter. There's nothing spiritual. There's only reality consists of what we can touch, taste, smell, feel, hear, and speculate about. There's nothing beyond that. So that we are raised in a materialistic culture in which, although it's not directly taught, we think that the goal of life is just to get through life as happily as we can. And that's all. And what happens after that? There's no information. But actually it is very reasonable faith to accept that when I was born in the particular body that I am inhabiting now, that wasn't the beginning of me. I am not simply a combination of chemicals. I existed before this body existed, and after this body ceases to exist, I shall continue to exist. Reincarnation. It's also very reasonable to presume that there is some purpose to existence in this world, although for us to find it out simply by using our intelligence, that is not possible. Therefore, we have to take information from those who know. Therefore, as stated here in the purport, that faith is created by association with devotees. Devotees are people who live their lives in Krishna consciousness, who live their lives as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada, Sevanam, Archana, whose lives are fully dedicated in service to Krishna. And by association with devotees, then we begin to experience what they are experiencing, which is Krishna consciousness, a life of dedication to Krishna. And it's an experience. Some things are experienced. Just like, for instance, we talk of love. Now, that's a very... the term love in this world is... something that's very much misunderstood. Often we think, well, I love someone, we loved, we got married, and then we fell in love, and then we fell out of love, and then we got divorced. That's not love. Because actual love, there's no divorce. And actual love, there's no ending to it either. Love in this world, even if you manage to make it through life without getting divorced, and you actually live to celebrate your 50th, what is it called, jubilee, golden jubilee of your wedding anniversary. But still that love will be ended in the course of time, by death. But real love is eternal. That love is possible in love for Krishna. So, what was I saying? Love, yeah. It's an example of something which... How can you explain it? Are you going to explain it just in terms of various impulses within the brain cells? Some people want to explain all human experience just in terms of various stimuli within the brain cells. But then if you love someone, you feel you love someone or you hate someone, it's not... The experience is more than some electric stimulus. I am a person who is experiencing that. So that I am a person, I am eternal, I am an eternal servant of Krishna. It requires faith, but devotees who practice Krishna consciousness, they live in that. They experience that all the time. And if we associate with such devotees, then we also begin to experience, and that creates our faith. And there are so many things to say about this. I didn't even get past the second line of this purport. I had a whole bunch of things I was going to say, but anyway, that's why we have regular meetings here with regular classes to discuss all these things. Hearing is very important. Srila Prabhupada had regular classes on this subject matter so that our faith can develop on the platform of spiritual knowledge. So, Shravanam Kirtanam. I wanted to speak. I guess there's no time. All right. Just very briefly, I wanted to say that recently there's been in our movement a development of having more and more kirtan, which is required. Hare Nama Eva Kevalam. But there should be an equal amount of shravan. We have to hear also the what is Krishna consciousness? The two must go together, Shravanam and Kirtanam. So, Hare Krishna. 5 o'clock is the cutoff time, is it? Yeah. If anyone wants to go and take prasad, well, I guess everyone does. But those of you who have to leave early or in a hurry to go, you can go. I mean, you could have gone before that. I also lock you up in the room. Are there any questions, comments, protests, or any other form of verbalizations that you wish to make? Please make them now. Oh, the idea of an eternal hell. Yeah, actually Jesus, he didn't speak much philosophy. He wasn't speaking to very philosophical people. The philosophy of Christianity was developed later on the basis of the Greek polytheistic or atheistic or not particularly religious philosophers. But Jesus, he also, what's that? There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's also there. In Vedic understanding, the understanding of hell is also there, but not eternal hell. There is punishment for sinful activities. And practically we see that on this planet also. There are hellish conditions. Toothache, that's a good sample of hell. Everyone's had a tooth. Anyone here has not had a toothache? I mean, apart from little toothache. I mean, some of them are pretty spectacular. It's pretty amazing how much pain you can get from a little tooth, isn't it? You ever had that kind of toothache where you just can't sleep all night? I guess in this country you rush off to the dentist and this and that, but if you're stuck in some village in Bangladesh, two days travel from the nearest town, then you just got to live with it. Who's had an ingrowing toenail? Anyone? Was it fun? It's very painful. It's amazing how a little thing like that can give you so much pain. How much pleasure can you get out of a toenail? Think about it. Anything? Well, I tell you one kind of pleasure. When you have an ingrowing toenail and you get it all cut out, you get pleasure out of that. Otherwise, I can't think of any pleasure. But it's even though it's a minor thing, if you go to the doctor and say, I've got an ingrowing toenail, it doesn't rush you off to the emergency ward and put you on life support and all this kind of thing. It's a minor thing, but it's very painful, isn't it? Very, very painful. Cancer, I didn't have it in this life yet. pray for me. I don't get it. I never. Then that's a very painful disease. What about the cows? They're also living beings. They're tortured. Of course, in this country, they're allowed to graze in the fields for about a month or more. Then they're put in the barns, is it? But in many, many cows in the world, they're just in like prisons all their life. And then they're slaughtered. Chickens, the way they're treated. There are no laws to protect chickens in any way whatsoever. You can kick them, and their beaks are taken out so they don't peck each other. It's extremely cruel. They're in hell. They're living beings, they're in hell. So we can see hell, it is there. Even on this planet, there are hellish conditions. But not eternal. The idea of eternal hell, that God is such an unkind person that he sends you to for extreme suffering with no possibility of ever coming out of that. Even if you say, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. I'm really sorry. Give me another chance. No. No way. No way. You were born in Thailand. You are Buddhist. You never heard of Jesus in your whole life. And you have to burn in hell forever. Not good theology. Not good theology. I mean, I could get in trouble saying this, but actually, Christianity, it's a tribal religion, actually. It was a tribal religion, the God of the Jews and the Jewish tribes, and then it became adopted, and it's not a very developed theology. Do you feel satisfied to think that there is a God and he will burn us in hell forever? Maybe those who think that I'm the one who's going to be saved and everyone else, but even if I'm confident that I would be saved, I wouldn't want to see everyone else burn in hell forever. Maybe I'd go and join the ones in hell just as a protest against God. It's not a very good idea. It doesn't seem to make him to be a very nice person, does it? These things can be very controversial to say, but atheism is growing in the world, and one of the main reasons is because of people look and see that, well, that's religion. And there's no intelligent way to understand. My mother was born in Belfast, in Northern Ireland. In Northern Ireland, for the last few centuries, there's been a big divide between the Catholics and the Protestants. It's still going on there. It's died down recently, for the time being. So, the Catholics teach that you have to believe in the Pope, otherwise you burn in hell. And the Protestants say, don't believe in the Pope, otherwise you'll burn in hell. And there's no intelligent way of understanding which one is correct. So what do? You flip a coin or something and hope, pray, God, please. I sometimes thought that if I ever see God coming to judge us, coming out of the sky, I'll stand in the middle of the road. On one side is a Catholic church, on one side is a Protestant church. Whatever side he lands on, I'll run in there and say, I'm here, save me. But it's not good theology. That's why Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he presents spiritual knowledge to Arjuna. Arjuna doesn't get it, and Krishna explains it to him again. And he still doesn't get it, and he explains it to him again. And we have to try to understand it. God has given us intelligence by which we should try to understand. Anyway, I didn't really want to do Christian bashing, but we should try to understand these matters intelligently and act intelligently. These are very serious matters. I mean, I've spoken a little joking style, a little bit during the last hour or so, but actually these are extremely serious matters. Human life is that one birth in which our future is determined. If we utilize it properly, then we can go to a higher state of existence. If we utilize it fully properly, we can go to the spiritual world, to Krishna. If we neglect this, if we act in the manner that what is considered a normal person in Europe acts every day, then we're going to be degraded, because the whole culture is a degraded culture, however proud we may be of our highly developed European culture. There's massive animal slaughter is one feature, complete ignorance of and neglect of the actual purpose of life, no spiritual knowledge. So the average person, however comfortably they may be situated, is spoiling their life. These are very serious topics we should take very seriously. And acting with faith. Well, this point I didn't get through. We should practice Krishna consciousness very seriously, with the understanding that this is our opportunity to get free from birth and death and go to Krishna. Very serious topics. Yayata mang prapadyante tangs tathaiva bhajami aham. We get from Krishna what we give to Krishna. Actually, if we make one step toward Krishna, Krishna takes 10 steps towards us, Srila Prabhupada said. But by a half-hearted approach, we're not going to go to Krishna. You have to take it very seriously. The whole culture of the modern world makes it very difficult to do so. But we have to make the decision to take to it very seriously, practice it very seriously. It's a great opportunity to get free from birth and death and go to Krishna. But again, the modern culture, this whole idea, just enjoy yourself, express yourself individually, it's not very conducive for Krishna consciousness. I have to finish now, is it? All right. Vayam tu na vitripyama uttama shloka vikrame tachinvatam rasa jnanam svadu svadu pade pade. That comes at the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Shonak Rishi, on behalf of the 60,000 rishis, the other 59,999, said to Suta Goswami, by listening to you, we are not satisfied. Really? By listening to a great saint, you should become satisfied. But he said, we're not satisfied. Hearing about the glories of Krishna, we are not satisfied, because we find it so satisfying, so pleasing, that we want more and more and more. So, it satisfies, but at the same time, it's so good, we want to hear more. Of course, he was specifically talking about uttama shloka vikrame, the activities of Krishna, who's described in the best verses. Because in the Vedic knowledge, there's so many verses, there's so many Puranas, there's Mahabharata, Ramayana, Vedas, Upavedas. But the best part is that which describes the activities of Krishna. But even to enter that, first we have to enter bhakti yoga and surrender to Krishna. This is the English word that Srila Prabhupada used, surrender. The Sanskrit term that is usually used is sharanam, sharanagati, or prapatti, which means taking shelter of Krishna. In this material world, there's no shelter. We are forced to die. We are forced to suffer. Take shelter of Krishna and go to Krishna. So that we have to do first. Then we become eligible to hear about Krishna. Then we can relish, as Suta Goswami was relishing, hearing about Krishna. So, yeah, there was one short question, and then I went on and on and on. We didn't even get to the question, did we? It was a comment which I commented on. Yeah. Francis of Assisi is widely recognized as probably the most saintly person in the history of Europe until all of you came. But unfortunately, his ideals, they're difficult to see. About 15 years ago, a cousin of mine, who was about 20 years younger than me, in Dublin, in Ireland, he came to visit me, and he was about 20-something years old at the time, and he said, I'm becoming a Franciscan monk. So I said, oh, so you're becoming a vegetarian? He said, no, I was a vegetarian, but to become a Franciscan monk, I have to become a non-vegetarian. So I thought that was strange, because St. Francis is famous for love of the animals. But Francis of Assisi, he embraced poverty, but even in his own lifetime, that was already being undermined. And his principles didn't last beyond his lifetime or even within his lifetime. Now, what is the reason for that? One reason is because there's no proper body of spiritual knowledge to sustain his saintliness. Unless we understand very clearly why we should do what we should do, then it can't be sustained, which is why in this Krishna Conscious Movement, we put a lot of emphasis on philosophical understanding. Because it seems intuitive to us that we should just try to enjoy our senses, isn't it? It seems that, well, we should just live life to get money, get food, and enjoy ourselves. So we need spiritual knowledge to keep us on the path by which we are not entangled in this material world by this wrong inclination to try to enjoy it. So Francis of Assisi was a highly renounced person. He was a highly God-conscious person. He empathized with all living beings. But there was, within his tradition, there isn't any clear knowledge of why others should also live like this. So it became usurped. And within our Krishna Conscious Movement also, unless we keep this knowledge in the forefront, then it's very possible that someone will come in and say, oh, big buildings, money. Okay, well, I think I could do something with this. It's not impossible. In fact, it's quite possible. So we're asking you to take to Krishna consciousness, but it's not really that we're asking you to come and join our movement and we'll build it up and then we'll compete with other religious movements. It's not like that. At least our preaching should be that how you can be benefited in the best possible way. Our motive should not be that we want to pull you in and then I become the leader of you. And we become a big movement, and we become prominent, and as we bring more people in, I become more prominent. this way of thinking is materialistic. But we should simply think that you please come, you take to Krishna consciousness for your own benefit. You will be benefited. We should have no motive to try to exploit you either directly or indirectly, grossly or subtly. Otherwise, it's not spiritual. We can just say it's spiritual, but it's not. It's not that we have a sign on the door. We are spiritual, and just by declaring that we become spiritual. But spiritual means non-materialistic. That means we don't have the same values as people in this world. Why is Francis of Assisi considered a great saint? He had completely different values to all the people around him. And that was appreciated. People could understand he's not an ordinary person. How to follow in the footsteps? Not everyone can just switch like that to go from being materialistic, partially materialistic, and become completely spiritually oriented. The bhakti yoga process is a process that if we apply ourselves to it, we also can become spiritual. We can't immediately overnight become a saint. But if we apply ourselves to this process, then from the outset we become saintly. Just by the principles itself, no eating of any food which is not offered to Krishna, which automatically rules out meat, fish and eggs. So one doesn't become saintly simply by being a vegetarian, but it's difficult to think of anyone as being saintly if they're not. Which rules out, by the way, Dalai Lama and Mother Teresa. That's not very popular thing to say, but it's a fact that one was and one is a meat eater. So no intoxication. One can't be a drunkard and be spiritually advanced. One cannot be a smoker of tobacco or marijuana or any other such thing and be spiritually advanced. Even to be addicted to coffee or chocolate. There's another Swiss famous thing. We're having a tour of Switzerland here during the course of the lecture. Even to be a chocoholic, that means that one has some affinity for something which has nothing connected to Krishna, nothing spiritual, nothing to help us spiritually advance. It's a mundane urge. So no meat eating, no gambling. We don't hear of Saint Francis quietly going to the local casino. There's no question of it. No illicit sex. Which means that within Krishna consciousness, sexual activity is allowed within marriage for the purpose of procreation of children. One cannot be grossly sensual, very interested in sex, and be a saintly person or have spiritual understanding. And one should apply oneself to a spiritual regime. That means daily, rising early, chanting the holy names of Krishna, leading actually a very disciplined life. Discipline is required. Otherwise, one cannot become spiritually advanced. It's not just by imagination that one becomes spiritually advanced. So, anything else? You see if any of the guests, you can ask questions all the time. Anyone else? Anyone else? Yes, please. Someone in this community or any community, if we become Krishna conscious, we go to Krishna. Where is Krishna?
Where is the place?
Yeah, this material world is called Martya Loka. It means the world of death. Krishna lives, yeah, not our world. We're here, we're not meant to be here. That's the problem. That's why we're here, because we think it's our world. But we're not meant to be here. We're supposed to be in Krishna Loka, the place of Krishna. There's a place where Krishna lives.
And Krishna,
yeah, there are other names. It's called Golok. That's another name for it. There are various names for it. But you don't have to worry. If you're fully Krishna conscious, you'll get taken there. You don't need a GPS to try and find your way. Enter in Golok. You'll get taken. Full VIP treatment. Krishna will take you. So, Hare Krishna. Seems that we ran out of questions. You want to say something and then we'll actually finish. Why do we call knowledge of the soul a science? That's a very interesting question. Well, that's right there in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna several times uses the word gyan and vigyan. Jnana vigyana triptatma kutastho vichitendriya, for instance. Krishna describes a perfect yogi as being one who is fully, his whole being is fully satisfied by knowledge, jnana and vigyana. Vijnana means specific or specialized knowledge, and it's also the word that is used in most modern Indian languages, which derive from Sanskrit, for what we call in English science. So it's called a science because science is supposed to methodically describe the nature of whatever it describes. And it's supposed to be predictable. Something is called a scientific law if for instance, someone comes up with a scientific theory, then they have to demonstrate it, and if the demonstration is reproducible by others, then it's called a scientific law. If in every case, for instance, if one burns hydrogen in an atmosphere of oxygen and condenses the gas, then under most circumstances it will turn out to be water. So therefore we can conclude, it is scientifically shown, of course that's not the only way, but that water is a combination of hydrogen and oxygen. That's science. It's predictable, it's reproducible, it's explainable why two atoms of oxygen bond with one atom, or two atoms of hydrogen bond with one atom of oxygen to form dihydrogen oxide, water. So it's systematic and explainable and reproducible. So Krishna consciousness, the science is called the science of the soul because both theoretically and practically, theoretically it's understandable and practically it's reproducible. If we take to Krishna consciousness, then we become free from the lower tendencies of lust, greed, anger, etc. And we experience the bliss of Krishna consciousness. So that's why it's called scientific.
Making a point about Mother Teresa and Dalai Lama, and them being a meat eater. I'm a Hindu, but I'm not a vegetarian as such. So I quite lost you there. What was the point that you were trying to make when you mentioned that Mother Teresa and Dalai Lama themselves, though they are...
Do you remember what I said?
Yes, I do.
What did I say?
You're mentioning something about Dalai Lama, but they said they have been progressed in their own so-called religion tradition. Maybe Mother Teresa
said
has
they are considered to be saintly persons.
Mm-hmm.
not so worrisome.
Yes. So my question is, does meat eating make them so insane?
Yeah, my point was that one cannot be saintly unless one follows some basic principles. If you're a woman monger, always chasing after sex, if you take intoxication, if you eat meat, you cannot be saintly.
Different religions teach different things.
Different religions teach different things, but there are principles of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Can one be merciful and be saint? Can one not be merciful and still be saintly? So meat eating generally involves slaughter of animals. Actually, it is possible in some cases to kill and be saintly. Just like Krishna told Arjuna to kill.
Yeah.
But to take meat from slaughterhouse animals means there's no mercy.
Okay, when you mentioned that Arjuna
was... Is that correct or not?
What do you say? I do agree to that, but...
But is it correct or not? Whether you agree or not doesn't matter because you're insignificant.
Yeah.
But animals that are tortured throughout their life and slaughtered so that you can eat meat, your eating of that meat, does that demonstrate mercy or not?
Not at all.
Not at all. So you can't be a saintly person and eat meat.
Yeah.
So that's the point.
Oh, that's the very point. But as I mentioned, there are different religions which teach...
Different religions teach different things, but it's... You can understand this as an axiom.
Uh-huh.
You know what axiom means?
Yeah, yeah.
That a person who needlessly eats the flesh of animals... is not demonstrating mercy. So religion may teach something, that means religion can be wrong.
Okay, so when we get to plant eating, when it has been demonstrated by experiments that plants have life,
so
what are we doing then?
Plants have feelings also, yeah.
So what are we doing then?
You're killing the plant, you may kill the plant. In many cases, eating plant food does not kill. For instance, when you eat rice, is the rice plant killed?
It's harvested in a sense.
When is it harvested?
Oh, after it ripens, or say, then it's own journey for life.
So you're not killing in that case?
In that case, say if a cow dies its own death and we eat its meat afterwards.
That's permissible.
It's permissible?
Yeah, it's permissible. It's not very high class,
but
it's permissible. It's not very high class because the nature of meat, even from an animal that dies naturally...
Yeah, that decays and all.
Well, even apart from that, the very nature of meat is that it affects the consciousness in a negative way.
Okay.
There are different kinds of foods affect our consciousness in different ways. So meat, even from animals that die naturally, is not good food for people interested in spiritual advancement. But it's not sinful in the way that taking slaughterhouse meat. So there is a difference. But it's probably not allowed in Switzerland to let animals die and then...
That I don't know. I'm not a Swiss.
Well,
I'm a Hindu. Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm from India only. I'm a Hindu, but I have these questions.
Like most Hindus today, you're a
meat eater.
But Maharaj, on the regulatory principle, it says that meat eating is one of the, for not eating is a regulatory principle.
Well, our real principle is to take Krishna prasadam. Krishna doesn't eat meat.
But Maharaj,
wait a minute, we're talking about the killing of much of plant food is not killed. The milk, if we take, doesn't kill the cow.
Yeah.
Fruit, if we take, doesn't kill the plant.
But it does.
In fact, it appears that within nature, the seed is in the fruit, and that by the human or other animals taking the fruit, that gets the seed spread, so it actually benefits the plant. Now some plant fruits are killed. For instance, if you pull a potato out of the earth, so some killing is there. But actually, in every activity that we perform, there's some karmic reaction. In fact, you can just walk on the street and kill some animals, some plants.
Nails and all.
So, to be completely free from sinful reaction, we should offer food to Krishna and take Krishna prasadam. To be a vegetarian gives less karmic reaction than being a meat eater. Still there's some karmic reaction. There's more karmic reaction being a meat eater because the animal has more developed consciousness and suffers more than the jiva in the body of a plant. So there's more karmic reaction. But there is karmic reaction for killing plants also. If you take grains, they're harvested after the plant dies. If you take fruit, you don't kill the plant. There are some other things, just like if you take the leaf from certain plants, you can eat it and then new leaves regenerate, although some pain may be involved. But the consciousness is very covered in the body of a plant.
Okay, then it comes to like, I don't know whether I'm right or not, maybe in ISKCON I've seen in temples, and if the prasadam is made, it's made without onions and garlic. What's the deal with that?
The deal in onions and garlic is that they also, like meat, they influence the consciousness in a way that is non-conducive for spiritual advancement. They're called tamasic foods. It means food in tamoguna that brings our consciousness down. Their origin also, according to the Puranas, is from slaughtered cows. In some instances you can kill a cow and eat it and not incur gross sin. In the case, it is mentioned in Shastra that if there's no other food, you could do that also. But mostly devotees of Krishna wouldn't want to do it even in that instance. It's recorded in Mahabharata. But that's called apadharma, or dharma to be followed in a time of emergency. Normally one should not do that. So the Shastras, they give very broad understanding. In one instance, what would be dharma, in another instance would be adharma. But generally there are certain principles. To be saintly, one should... Real religion means there's mercy, cleanliness, austerity, and truthfulness. Without that, there's no real religion. So different religions teach different things, but some of them, many of the religious paths, they're not based on clear understanding. They have no clear understanding of what is the nature of this, of the Atma, what is the nature of Paramatma. For instance, in the beginning of the Bible, it said that God gave man dominion over the animals. Dominion means control. So they interpret that to mean that man should exploit the animals. That's a gross misinterpretation.
Okay, when we are using a cow for milk or for any other...
We don't think of using a cow.
Okay.
That very mentality, using a cow.
Then what do we say?
We should serve the cow.
Okay, when we serve the cow for milk...
We don't use it. The idea of using another living being. That whole mentality leads to a whole sinful outlook on life. Other living beings are there for us to use. We should understand they're also part and parcel of Krishna. They're not for us to use.
I mean, it does make sense, but this has been what has been done over the ages and how
what
human life...
What people do, who is not necessarily what they should do.
But this is how human life evolved, right?
We made fire, we made use of animals, how do you know? What does this evolve?
I mean, that's what we read in science, right?
That's nonsense. It's a nonsensical idea. That life came out of, by random interactions of chemicals, the whole universe came into being. You believe it because you believe the nonsense you were taught at school. Here, where's this? Give this. Where did this come from?
Probably this is, I don't know, 10 or something.
How did this come into being? Make a guess.
In some tin factory.
From some steel, actually.
Actually,
what happened was there was a pile of garbage in my backyard, in my house. One day there was a huge storm and all the garbage came together and it came to this. Believe it?
No.
How much intelligence went into making this? It's made of steel. Steel is what? It's iron with an admixture of?
Aluminum.
What is it? Anyone? Carbon. So, stainless. So, to discover how to make, how to find iron, iron comes from iron ore, which is generally in mineral deposits. How to find it, extract it, it's ferric oxide, ferrous oxide, different forms in which iron exists. It's all the different forms of iron are mixed up with different minerals. How to find it, extract it, process it, and utilize it to make this. This was made presumably with a machine in a factory. How to make the machine so it makes it just to the right size, not too thick, not too thin. If it's too thin, it'll get crushed. If it's too thick, then it unnecessarily becomes costly and heavy. So it's just made, it's perfect circle. This fits very nicely, so I don't have, it goes on very easily, comes off very easily, but it doesn't fall off. So a tremendous amount of intelligence went into making this. It doesn't leak, it's stainless steel. I've had it for quite a few years. It doesn't rust. Not only the making, but also the economics of it. Is it economical to make it, to market it? Is there a demand for it? I mean, all kinds of people, from geologists and engineers, technologists, businessmen, huge amount of intelligence has gone into making this. This is an extremely simple thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you want to say the whole universe is coming to being just by chance? You couldn't even imagine that this could come into being by chance, but you believe, because they taught you at school, that the whole universe with life in it has come into being by chance. What do you think? You never thought of it before. Well, welcome to a new sphere of thought. Look at that zip. Simple thing. Simple it seems, but that was actually, do you know how that was discovered? By seeing in nature that there are some plants that they'll catch onto your cloth or onto your leg if you're walking. So someone thought, oh, we could use it for something else too. So with human design this was made, but it was also originally in nature. By chance? We're talking about the seeds of a tree. They get spread so that another tree can grow up by someone taking that, taking it away, eating it, and throwing away the seeds. It all came just by chance. Not a very good theory. A much better theory is that it's designed with a purpose, isn't it? Just like if I say this came into being just by some random explosion. A much better theory is that it was made by intelligent people with a specific purpose. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? But if you've been brainwashed all your life, it's difficult to accept. And everyone else believes it too. Well, I tell you what, if everyone in Zurich believed that this came into being by chance, would that still make it plausible? No. You have a lot of things to learn. You should learn.
Okay, come on. Nothing to laugh. Yeah.
You should learn this Vedic knowledge, that Veda means knowledge. Knowledge of the universe, everything in it, and everything beyond it. You should learn that. Don't waste your valuable human life. Take this very seriously. What are you doing in Switzerland? On a project?
Yeah.
IT?
Yeah.
predictable. So you can use, now you're here, you have probably more time than you'd have in India, because if they don't work you so hard over here as they do there. Is it? Here also.
Harder.
Project means they can do it to Indians. They can't do it to Swiss people, wouldn't agree to work like that.
Yeah. Not in that much money.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, you study Bhagavad Gita. You should study this. This knowledge. Actual knowledge of who we are. Otherwise your life is just going away. You don't know what you're doing, why you're here, where you're going. What happens after death? Do you know? You should know. You should try to find out, right? The knowledge is there in Bhagavad Gita. You should take that knowledge. If we don't live our life for elevation, then there'll be degradation. And the whole world is going on ignorance. In the Western countries, people are very proud that we have such a great civilization, but it's all based on ignorance. On the ignorance of thinking that if we have lots of money, then we'll be happy. Ignorance. Where are you from?
Delhi.
Delhi. So all the big cities, they're also going on the same ignorance. Build big buildings, have a big city, be modern, then we'll be happy. But people aren't happy. The so-called ignorant people in the village, they don't have all the facilities of Delhi. They want to go to Delhi, but they don't become happy by doing so. The real happiness is Atma Sukh, not Deha Sukh or Indriya Sukh. Atma Sukh. So for that we have to understand, I am Atma, I am not the body. So you please try to understand. Give one Bhagavad Gita as it is.
Yeah, I will give you.
Study those things. Try to understand. This movement is meant for giving spiritual knowledge. So try to understand. When do you expect to go to Delhi?
Sorry?
When are you scheduled to go back to Delhi?
Not yet scheduled as such, but on a short trip or vacation.
We have many centers in Delhi also. Delhi, Greater Delhi area. What is it called?
Greater Kailash.
No, that's the main center. But we have many places.
That's the biggest.
Punjabibad and Noida and Ghaziabad and Faridabad and Dwarka. Next to IIT. And so many places. I think there are 13 centers here. What's it called? Greater Capital Territory? Something like that.
Greater National Noida. Capital.
National
NCR. Capital Region.
National Capital.
National Capital Region, NCR.
Greater Capital Territory. What's that? Someone else. Some other country.
We call it the NCR.
Yeah, yeah. National Capital
Region.
Over the state, so-called state of Delhi, parts of Haryana and UP. So how about that? Evolution. You learned it at school. It's bogus.
Darwin fooled us.
Well, I don't think Darwin is out to fool anyone in particular, but it's just the theory that he came up with. And what Darwin taught is, that's the basis of modern evolutionary theory. That's not, of course, they developed many more ideas since then. Darwin, at that time, there's no idea in the biological cells what to speak of genes, and DNA, and all that. That's much more recent. In fact, the existence of atoms wasn't even clearly understood at the time of Darwin. So science has developed a lot more, but there's some serious problems there. Serious problems with this theory. Genetic mutations give rise to progress of the species. But whatever genetic mutations we see in humans, they're mostly problematic. Like someone, just like sometimes you see in Delhi some bull with an extra leg. Have you seen like that? They have five legs. So if a human has an extra limb, it's usually problematic.
Yeah.
And even if someone's a super genius, usually their children are super geniuses. And even a super genius like Einstein's, widely thought to be the most intelligent person of the 20th century. But he was only interested in matter. He didn't ask the really important questions. What happens after death? What is the nature of life? Why is there suffering in this world? He was concerned only with this world, which means that in one sense he was intelligent, but in another not, because he applied his intelligence to that which is not that important, actually. Just like scientists may apply their intelligence to understand how the grass grows. But it's not really that important to understand how the grass grows. The farmer knows how the grass grows. He feeds it to the cow and takes milk. He doesn't have to know how it grows. And then they discover, and then they make some new kind of grass by genetic modification, and they think they're making progress. And then a few generations down the line, they find that actually, they had the Green Revolution, and now it's turning into a nightmare. The long-term revolution, long-term effects, and then with all their new ideas, the cows are getting different kinds of diseases. The humans are getting different kinds of diseases. So it's better they just didn't bother with all that and just try to study the really important things. Whether the grass grows this way or that way, we have to die. What is the nature of life? Why do we die? How do we get beyond suffering? These are the really intelligent questions we should ask. If we're simply trying to study this world, it means even though Einstein and many others may be in many ways very intelligent, but their level of consciousness is very low, because they're only concerned with matter. They're not concerned with spirit. That's not very intelligent. You are an eternal living being. Before you were in that body, you were in so many other bodies. After you leave that body, you'll be in many other bodies. If we understand this, then we should stop thinking only in terms of this one life. It's just one life. Boom, 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 one birth after another. Why? Why is this going on? How can we get out of it? That we should consider. That's real intelligence. So, by the grace of God, you've got some little more intelligence, material intelligence, than most people. Many young people of your age in India would like to have a job in Switzerland, even if it's temporary. But that's not the perfection of life, I'm sure you'd agree with that. Nor does it intrinsically bring any happiness. It brings a little prestige when you go back to India. You can be. But in your own workplace, it doesn't bring any prestige. But among me. It's just like in Gulf countries, Dubai, Kuwait. Someone from Bangladesh in the village goes to work there once every year or two, and they go home. He's a big man. Oh, he's working in Kuwait. Cleaning the toilets there. But then when they go back to their village, big man working overseas. So, this anyway, what is this prestige? It's nonsense, actually.
False prestige. Yeah.
So better find out. Use your intelligence to understand this philosophy of life. Get free from birth and death. You can do it. You have to know how also. A good start would be to stop eating meat. Even physically. Physically, yeah. Nowadays, in the West, so many people have become vegetarians. You know the main reason why? For health. Because meat causes so many diseases. High blood pressure, cancer. Meat means it's full of all chemicals, it's excessive protein, very difficult to digest. Human body is like the body of vegetarians. Animals like dogs that are made for meat eating, they have very high concentrations of acid in the stomach which will quickly digest the meat, and short intestine, so the whole digestion process is finished quickly because there's so much poison in the meat. But humans have lower acid in the stomach and long intestines, like vegetarian animals. So it's actually very bad for health. When I was a kid, we were taught that eating meat is very good for health. Now they understood it's not true. Now they're teaching that in India. People think, I've become very healthy by eating meat, but actually it's the opposite. Is there anything in the West, like if they ban some medicine in Switzerland, then they send it all to India.
India.
And they're all the people.
Because somehow they have to get the money.
They have to get the money, yeah. They invested so much money in research, and they have all these factories made to make it.
And in fact, I was told somebody that they create new drugs, and inside they will put another problem, so that
you need another drug. Another drug. Yeah.
And that's true.
And they, like in America, Ayurveda is banned.
Yeah.
Because it's cheap, and you don't have to spend. Then the pharmaceutical companies are finished.
Yeah, it's a big lobby, pharmaceutical. Like
they spend millions of dollars. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much, Mother.
So there's so much bogus propaganda, beginning with what, even before you go to school. The propaganda begins. The whole idea, you will be happy by getting money. That's very much part of the consciousness all over the world. And maybe more, in some ways, India is more materialistic than the West. Because here people just kind of have money, but in India it's... working out. When's the darshan open?
7 o'clock.
Hare Krishna. Sat Bhaji. Darshan. Anyway, he's gone. So time to get some spiritual education. Give him the Bhagavad Gita as it is. What time does Ramakant Prabhu come here? He comes here on Sunday evening, is it?
On Sunday, I'm not sure if he comes on Sunday.
Madhava?
No.
Ramakanta.
He doesn't come on Sunday.
No, he's not coming on Sunday.
On Saturday?
No. Every other day.
Yeah, Sunday he doesn't come.
I wanted to meet him.
Did Sankirtan Prabhu from Switzerland manage to contact you?
No, I didn't.
No, I heard in some of those that for the Kshatriyas, so we have five regulatory principles, that, you know, four regulatory principles.
Four regulatory principles. Yes. Kshatriyas, yeah, they may eat meat under certain circumstances.
Correct. I mean, then how to understand that in respect of the regulatory principle? I mean, they are allowed to associate with women, allowed to, and then if there is...
Under regulation, But in this Kali Yuga, for those who are joining this Krishna conscious movement, the general rule is no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication.
Correct.
In previous ages, Kshatriyas, they would eat meat under regulation. Mm. But they'd also protect the citizen. Nowadays, people are born and they say, I'm Kshatriya by caste. But the only sign of them being a Kshatriya is that they eat meat. They don't do the job of a Kshatriya. They should, if there's a real Kshatriya, there should be no criminal. If there's any criminal, then the Kshatriya is to blame. So they're not real Kshatriyas.
So we should not strictly abide by the four regulative principles in Kali Yuga. Should not even think about all these things.
If we're to be spiritually advanced, we can allow in society people are going to eat meat. If they're not very spiritually advanced, we can allow them that when the animal dies, they can take the meat and eat that. Or they can kill the animal according to the Vedic process by sacrificing maximum once a month. But they'll also, but they're also a karmic reaction. They won't become spiritually advanced, but it will. That will save them from the slaughterhouse culture. So if they sacrifice a goat or a sheep or a buffalo, they can do that. We don't recommend it, but they can do it. But slaughterhouse is completely, grossly sinful. And killing cows is grossly sinful. But not for you. You're not meant for eating meat.
I mean, sometimes.
And even you see, if you're sitting in an office all day and you're eating meat, then it produces far too much heat and energy for the body.
And sometimes, whatever people take the shelter of these things, in Vedic time, people used to eat
They may give so many excuses. Yeah, they have to study from an acharya and learn how they should live. They may say in Vedic times, the Kshatriyas say, okay, well, you act like a Kshatriya also. And there should be no thief. There should be no rape. There should be so many things. They're not Kshatriyas. If there's a democracy, it means there's no Kshatriya. Okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much.
Making a point about Mother Teresa and Dalai Lama and them being a meat eater. I'm a Hindu, but I'm not a vegetarian as such. So I quite lost you there. What was the point that you were trying to make when you mentioned that Mother Teresa and Dalai Lama themselves, though they are...
Do you remember what I said?
Yes, I do. You're mentioning something about Dalai Lama and Mother Teresa. You said they have been progressed in their own so-called religion traditions. Maybe Mother Teresa
said they are considered to be saintly persons.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not so very saintly.
Yes. So my question is, does meat eating make them so insane?
Yeah, my point was that one cannot be saintly unless one follows some basic principles. If you're a woman monger, always chasing after sex, if you take intoxication, if you eat meat, you cannot be saintly.
Different religions teach different things.
Different religions teach different things, but there are principles of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Can one be merciful and be saint? Can one not be merciful and still be saint?
Mm-hmm.
No. So meat eating generally involves slaughter of animals. Actually, it is possible in some cases to kill and be saint.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Krishna told Arjuna to kill.
Yeah?
But to take meat from slaughterhouse animals means there's no mercy.
Okay, when you mentioned that Arjuna was...
Is that correct or not?
what do you say? I do agree to that, but...
But is it correct or not? Whether you agree or not doesn't matter because you're insignificant.
Yeah.
But animals that are tortured throughout their life and slaughtered so that you can eat meat, your eating of that meat, does that demonstrate mercy or not?
Not at all.
Not at all. So you can't be a saintly person and eat meat.
Yeah.
So that's the point.
Oh, that's the very point. But as I mentioned, there are different religions which teach...
Different religions teach different things, but it's... You can understand this as an axiom. What axiom means?
Yeah, yeah.
That a person who needlessly eats the flesh of animals is not demonstrating mercy. So religion may teach something, that means a religion can be wrong.
Okay, so when we get to plant eating, when it has been demonstrated by experiments that plants have life,
plants, so
what are we doing then?
Plants have feelings also, yeah.
So what are we doing then?
You're killing the plant? You may kill the plant. In many cases, eating plant food does not kill. For instance, when you eat rice, is the rice plant killed?
It's harvested in a sense.
When is it harvested?
Oh, after it ripens, or say, then it's own journey for life.
So you're not killing
in that case? In that case, say if a cow dies its own death and we eat its meat afterwards.
That's permissible.
It's permissible?
Yeah, it's permissible. It's not very high class,
but
it's permissible. It's not very high class because the nature of meat, even from an animal that dies naturally...
Yeah, that decays and all.
Well, even apart from that, the very nature of meat is that it affects the consciousness in a negative way.
Okay.
There are different kinds of foods affect our consciousness in different ways. So meat, even from animals that die naturally, is not good food for people interested in spiritual advancement. But it's not sinful in the way that taking slaughterhouse meat. So there is a difference. But it's probably not allowed in Switzerland to let animals die and then...
That I don't know. I'm not a Swiss.
Well,
I'm a Hindu. Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm from India only. I'm a Hindu, but I have these questions.
Like most Hindus today, you're
a meat
eater.
But Maharaj, on the regulatory principle, it says that meat eating is one of the... For not eating is a regulatory principle.
Well, our real principle is to take Krishna prasadam. Krishna doesn't eat meat. Wait a minute, we're talking about the killing of... Much of plant food is not killed. The milk, if we take, doesn't kill the cow.
Yeah.
Fruit, if we take, doesn't kill the plant.
But it does.
In fact, it appears that within nature, the seed is in the fruit, and that by the human or other animals taking the fruit, that gets the seed spread, so it actually benefits the plant. Now some plant foods are killed. For instance, if you pull a potato out of the earth, so some killing is there. But actually, in every activity that we perform, there's some karmic reaction. In fact, you can just walk on the street and kill some animals, some plants.
Nailed and all.
So, to be completely free from sinful reaction, we should offer food to Krishna and take Krishna prasadam. To be a vegetarian gives less karmic reaction than being a meat eater. Still, there's some karmic reaction. There's more karmic reaction being a meat eater because the animal has more developed consciousness and suffers more than the jiva in the body of a plant. So there's more karmic reaction. But there is karmic reaction for killing plants also. If you take grains, they're harvested after the plant dies. If you take fruit, you don't kill the plant. There are some other things, just like if you take the leaf from certain plants, you can eat it and then new leaves regenerate, although some pain may be involved. But the consciousness is very covered in the body of a plant.
Okay, then it comes to I don't know whether I'm right or not, maybe in ISKCON I've seen in temples, and if the prasadam is made, it's made without onions and garlic. What's the deal with that?
The deal in onions and garlic is that they also, like meat, they influence the consciousness in a way that is non-conducive for spiritual advancement. They're called tamasic foods, means food in tamoguna that brings our consciousness down. Their origin, also according to the Puranas, is from slaughtered cows. In some instances, you can kill a cow and eat it and not incur gross sin. In a case, it is mentioned in Shastra that if there's no other food, you could do that also. But mostly devotees of Krishna wouldn't want to do it even in that instance. It's recorded in Mahabharata. But that's called apadharma, or dharma to be followed in a time of emergency. Normally one should not do that. So the Shastras, they give very broad understanding. In one instance, what would be dharma, in another instance would be adharma. But generally there are certain principles. To be saintly, one should... Real religion means there's mercy, cleanliness, austerity and truthfulness. Without that, there's no real religion. So different religions teach different things, but some of them, many of the religious paths, they're not based on clear understanding. They have no clear understanding of what is the nature of this, of the Atma, what is the nature of Paramatma. For instance, in the beginning of the Bible, it said that God gave man dominion over the animals. Dominion means control. So they interpret that to mean that man should exploit the animals. That's a gross misinterpretation.
Okay, when we are using a cow for milk or for any other...
We don't think of using a cow.
Okay.
That very mentality, using a cow.
Then what do we say?
We should serve the cow.
Okay, when we serve the cow for milk...
We don't use it. The idea of using another living being. That whole mentality leads to a whole sinful outlook on life. Other living beings are there for us to use. We should understand they're also part and parcel of Krishna. They're not for us to use.
I mean, it does make sense, but this has been what has been done over the ages and what how
what
human life has
evolved. What people do is not necessarily what they should do.
But this is how human life evolved, right?
We made fire, we made use of animals. How do you know? What does this evolve?
I mean, that's what we read in science, right?
That's nonsense. It's a nonsensical idea. That life came out of, by random interactions of chemicals, the whole universe came into being. You believe it because you believe the nonsense you were taught at school. Here, where's this? Give this. Where did this come from?
Probably this is, I don't know, 10 or something.
How did this come into being? Make a guess.
In some tin factory. From some
steel, actually.
Actually,
what happened was, there was a pile of garbage in my backyard, in my house. One day there was a huge storm and all the garbage came together and it came to this. Believe it?
No.
How much intelligence went into making this? It's made of steel. Steel is what? It's iron with an admixture of?
Aluminum. Okay. What is it?
Anyone? Carbon. So, stainless. So, to discover how to make, how to find iron. Iron comes from iron ore, which is generally in mineral deposits. How to find it, extract it. It's ferric oxide, ferrous oxide, different forms in which iron exists. It's all the different forms of iron are mixed up with different minerals. How to find it, extract it, process it and utilize it to make this. This was made presumably with a machine in a factory. How to make the machine? So it makes it just to the right size, not too thick, not too thin. If it's too thin, it'll get crushed. If it's too thick, then it's unnecessarily becomes costly and heavy. So it's just made, it's perfect circle. This fits very nicely, so I don't have, it goes on very easily, comes off very easily, but it doesn't fall off. So a tremendous amount of intelligence went into making this. It doesn't leak, it's stainless steel. I've had it for quite a few years. It doesn't rust. Not only the making, but also the economics of it. Is it economical to make it, to market it? Is there a demand for it? I mean, all kinds of people, from geologists and engineers, technologists, businessmen, huge amount of intelligence has gone into making this. This is an extremely simple thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you want to say the whole universe is coming to being just by chance? You couldn't even imagine that this could come into being by chance, but you believe, because they taught you at school, that the whole universe with life in it has come into being by chance. What do you think? You never thought of it before. Well, welcome to a new sphere of thought. Look at that zip. Simple thing. Simple it seems, but that was actually, do you know how that was discovered? By seeing in nature that there are some plants that they'll catch onto your cloth or onto your leg if you're walking. So someone thought, oh, we could use it for something else too. So with human design this was made, but it was also originally in nature. By chance? We're talking about the seeds of a tree.
Mm-hmm.
They get spread so that another tree can grow up by someone taking that, taking it away, eating it, and throwing away the seeds. It all came just by chance. Not a very good theory. A much better theory is that it's designed with a purpose, isn't it? Just like if I say this came into being just by some random explosion. A much better theory is that it was made by intelligent people with a specific purpose. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? But if you've been brainwashed all your life, it's difficult to accept. And everyone else believes it too. Well, I tell you what, if everyone in Zurich believed that this came into being by chance, would that still make it plausible? No. You have a lot of things to learn. You should learn.
Okay, come on. Nothing to laugh. Yeah.
You should learn this Vedic knowledge, that Veda means knowledge. Knowledge of the universe, everything in it, and everything beyond it. You should learn that. Don't waste your valuable human life. Take this very seriously. What are you doing in Switzerland? On a project?
Yeah.
IT?
Yeah.
Predictable. So, you can use, now you're here, you have probably more time than you'd have in India. Is it? They don't work you so hard over here as they do there. Is it? Here also.
Harder.
Project means they can do it to Indians. They can't do it to Swiss people. Wouldn't agree to work like that.
Yeah.
Not in that much money.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, you study Bhagavad Gita. You should study this. This knowledge, actual knowledge of who we are. Otherwise, your life is just going away. You don't know what you're doing, why you're here, where you're going. What happens after death? Do you know? You should know. You should try to find out, right?
Yeah.
Knowledge is there in Bhagavad Gita. You should take that knowledge. If we don't live our life for elevation, then there'll be degradation. And the whole world is going on ignorance. In the Western countries, people are very proud that we have such a great civilization, but it's all based on ignorance. On the ignorance of thinking that if we have lots of money, then we'll be happy. Ignorance. Where are you from?
Delhi.
Delhi. So all the big cities, they're also going on the same ignorance. Build big buildings, have a big city, be modern, then we'll be happy. But people aren't happy. The so-called ignorant people in the village, they don't have all the facilities of Delhi. They want to go to Delhi, but they don't become happy by doing so. The real happiness is Atma Sukh. Not Deha Sukh or Indriya Sukh, Atma Sukh. So for that we have to understand, I am Atma, I am not the body. So you please try to understand. Give one Bhagavad Gita as it is.
Yeah, I will give you.
And you can come and study those things. Try to understand. This movement is meant for giving spiritual knowledge. So try to understand. When do you expect to go to Delhi?
Sorry?
When are you scheduled to go back to Delhi?
Not yet scheduled as such, but on a short trip of vacation.
Oh, I see. Yeah, we have many centers in Delhi also. Delhi, Greater Delhi area. What is it called?
Kailash.
No, that's the main center. But we have many places.
That's the biggest.
Punjabi Bad and Noida and Ghaziabad and Faridabad and Dwarka and next to IIT and so many places. I don't remember. I think about 13 centers here. What's it called? Greater Capital Territory or something like that?
Greater
National
Noida.
National
Capital Region.
National Capital.
National Capital Region, NCR.
The capital territory, or someone else.
We call it NCR.
Yeah, yeah. National Capital
Region.
Yeah. Over the state, so-called state of Delhi, parts of Haryana and UP. So how about that? Evolution. You learn it at school. It's bogus.
Darwin fooled us.
Well, I don't think Darwin is out to fool anyone in particular, but it's just the theory that he came up with. And what Darwin taught is, that's the basis of modern evolutionary theory. That's not, of course, they developed many more ideas since then. And Darwin, at that time, there's no idea of biological cells, what to speak of genes and DNA and all that. That's much more recent. In fact, the existence of atoms wasn't even clearly understood at the time of Darwin. So science has developed a lot more, but there's some serious problems there. Serious problems with this theory. Genetic mutations give rise to progress of the species. But whatever genetic mutations we see in humans, they're mostly problematic. Like someone Just like sometimes you see in Delhi some bull with an extra leg. Have you seen like that? They have five legs. So if a human has an extra limb, it's usually problematic.
Yeah.
And even if someone's a super genius, usually their children are super geniuses. And even a super genius like Einstein's widely thought to be the most intelligent person of the 20th century. But he was only interested in matter. He didn't ask the really important questions. What happens after death? What is the nature of life? Why is there suffering in this world? He was concerned only with this world, which means that in one sense he was intelligent, but in another not, because he applied his intelligence to that which is not that important, actually. Just like scientists may apply their intelligence to understand how the grass grows. But it's not really that important to understand how the grass grows. The farmer knows how the grass grows. He feeds it to the cow and takes milk. He doesn't have to know how it grows. And then they discover, and then they make some new kind of grass by genetic modification, and they think they're making progress. And then a few generations down the line, they find that actually had the Green Revolution, and now it's turning into a nightmare. The long-term revolution. Long-term effects, and then with all their new ideas, the cows are getting different kinds of diseases, the humans are getting different kinds of diseases. So it's better they just didn't bother with all that and just try to study the really important things. Whether the grass grows this way or that way, we have to die. What is the nature of life? Why do we die? How do we get beyond suffering? These are the really intelligent questions we should ask. If we're simply trying to study this world, it means even though Einstein and many others may be in very many ways very intelligent, but their level of consciousness is very low, because they're only concerned with matter. They're not concerned with spirit. That's not very intelligent. That's what. You are an eternal living being. Before you were in that body, you were in so many other bodies. After you leave that body, you'll be in many other bodies. If we understand this, then we should stop thinking only in terms of this one life. Just one life. Boom, 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 boom. One birth after another. Why? Why is this going on? How can we get out of it? That we should consider. That's real intelligence. By the grace of God, you've got some little more intelligence, material intelligence, than most people. Many young people of your age in India would like to have a job in Switzerland, even if it's temporary. But that's not the perfection of life, I'm sure you'd agree with that. Nor does it intrinsically bring any happiness. Brings a little prestige when you go back to India. You can be. But in your own workplace, it doesn't bring any prestige. But among me. It's just like in Gulf countries, Dubai, Kuwait. Someone from Bangladesh in the village goes to work there once every year or two and they go home. He's a big man. Oh, he's working in Kuwait. Cleaning the toilets there. But when they go back to their village, oh, big man, working overseas. So, this, anyway, what is this prestige? It's nonsense, actually.
False prestige.
Yeah. So better find out. Use your intelligence to understand this philosophy of life. Get free from birth and death. You can do it.
Okay.
You have to know how also. A good start would be to stop eating meat. Even physically. Physically, yeah. Nowadays, in the West, so many people have become vegetarians. You know the main reason why? For health. Because meat causes so many diseases. High blood pressure, cancer. Meat means it's full of all chemicals, it's excessive protein, very difficult to digest. Human body is like the body of vegetarians. Animals like dogs that are made for meat eating, they have very high concentrations of acid in the stomach which will quickly digest the meat, and short intestine, so the whole digestion process is finished quickly because there's so much poison in the meat. But humans have lower acid in the stomach and long intestines, like vegetarian animals. So it's actually very bad for health. When I was a kid, we were taught that eating meat is very good for health. Now they understood it's not true. Now they're teaching that in India. People say, I become very healthy by eating meat, but actually it's the opposite. Is there anything in the West, like if they ban some medicine in Switzerland, then they send it all to India. And they're all the people.
Because somehow they have to get the money.
They have to get the money, yeah. They invested so much money in research, and they have all these factories made to make it.
And in fact, I was told somebody that they create new drugs, and inside they will put another problem, so that you need another drug. Yeah. And that's true.
And they, like in America, Ayurveda is banned because it's cheap, and you don't have to spend. Then the pharmaceutical companies are finished. Yeah,
it's a big lobby, pharmaceutical.
They spend millions of dollars. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much, Mahārāja.
So there's so much bogus propaganda, beginning with what, even before you go to school, the propaganda begins. The whole idea, you will be happy by getting money. That's very much part of the consciousness all over the world. And maybe more, in some ways, India is more materialistic than the West. Because here people just kind of have money, but in India it's working. When's the darshan open?
7 o'clock.
Hare Krishna. Sat baje. Darshan. Anyway, please go. So time to get some spiritual education. Give him the Bhagavad Gita as it is. What time does Ramakant Prabhu come here? He comes here on Sunday evening, is it?
On Sunday, I'm not sure if he comes on Sunday.
Madhava?
No.
Ramakanta.
He doesn't come on Sunday.
No, he's not coming on Sunday.
On Saturday.
Every other day.
Sunday,
he doesn't come. Lecture from lunch. I wanted to meet him. Did Sankirtan Prabhu from Switzerland manage to contact you?
No, I didn't.
I heard in some of those that for the Kshatriyas, so we have 5 regulatory principles, and that, you know, 4 regulatory principles.
4 regulatory principles. Yes. Kshatriyas, yeah, they may eat meat under certain circumstances.
Correct. I mean, then how to understand that in respect of the regulatory principle? I mean, they are allowed to associate with women, allowed to, and then if there is...
Under regulation. But in this Kali Yuga, for those who are joining this Krishna conscious movement, the general rule is no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication.
Correct.
In previous ages, Kshatriyas, they would eat meat under regulation. But they'd also protect the citizen. Nowadays, people are born and they say, I'm Kshatriya, by caste. But the only sign of them being a Kshatriya is that they eat meat. They don't do the job of a Kshatriya. They should, if there's a real Kshatriya, there should be no criminal. If there's any criminal, then the Kshatriya is to blame. So they're not real Kshatriyas.
So we should not, should strictly abide by the 4 regulative principle in Kali Yuga, should not even think about all these things.
If we're to be spiritually advanced, we can allow in society people who are going to eat meat if they're not very spiritually advanced, we can allow them that when the animal dies, they can take the meat and eat that. Or they can kill the animal according to the Vedic process by sacrificing maximum once a month. But they'll also, a karmic reaction. They won't become spiritually advanced, but it will. That will save them from the slaughterhouse culture. So if they sacrifice a goat or a sheep or a buffalo, they can do that. We don't recommend it, but they can do it. But slaughterhouse is completely, grossly sinful. And killing cows is grossly sinful. But not for you. You're not meant for eating meat.
I mean, sometimes.
And even you see, if you're sitting in an office all day and you're eating meat, then it produces far too much heat and energy for the body.
And sometimes, whatever people take the shelter of these things, that in Vedic time people used to eat.
They may give so many excuses. Yeah, they have to study from an acharya and learn how they should live. They may say in Vedic times the kshatriyas say, okay, well, you act like a kshatriya also. And there should be no thief. There should be no rape. There should be so many things. They're not kshatriyas. If there's a democracy, it means there's no kshatriya. Okay, Hare Krishna.